Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, as usual, Tom Shortell, and I'm here with co-host and producer Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom. What a crazy week.
How crazy is it? You came in here dressed up like Roy Rogers. What happened?
You know? I know. We're celebrating the arrival of 103.1 The Wolf here at the radio
station.
New
country and western station,
new
right?
New country station. So, and there's a lot going on. Country music. You got Tim McGraw coming to town next week.
Really?
So we're having a little get-together today to help launch the station. We got a new show coming starting on Monday.
Really?
From Nashville.
Really?
So it's if you're into country music, 103.1 The Wolf is definitely a place you might want to stop in and visit.
I listen to a little bit more of it now than I used to. I was never a country guy growing up. I was more of a, you know, a rock and roll kid. But there's a lot of crossover stuff now, you know, between rock and country. I mean, some of the country sounds to me like it's rock pop music, you know.
Most definitely. But what's really interesting is, and again, it's been part of the week, the Rolling Stones are on tour again.
Jeez, you know, the Mausoleum tour. It's like the last,
Along the way, they obviously they're a rock band, but rock is a pretty liberal genre.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's, they had some real bluesy stuff.
Yeah, they even had some country, you know, like Dead Flowers. Dead Flowers is kind of a country,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah.
When you're sitting there with your silk upholstered chair, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, I think it's like anything else. I'll bring this back to food at some point. But it's like anything else. I mean, you know, like you watch, you know, sushi was this exotic thing in the early 80s. Now it's mainstream American food.
Again,
you know?
We're the same age. We grew up. I guess we were sort of in high school in the 70s. Sushi wasn't a thing when I was growing up.
No,
it wasn't until I got married in like 79.
Yeah, it was the early 80s when it really
got. There was something
in
Glen Cove that I went to for the first time, sushi.
Uh-huh.
But it's funny. That makes me just quickly think at some of the things that today you take for granted. But,
yeah, yeah.
Water in plastic bottles.
Yeah.
Whoever heard of that?
No, we used to drink out of the hose, right?
You had a thermos. You had a hose. Yeah. There was nothing like hose water. It had that taste.
Yeah, that hose taste.
Yogurt. Yogurt just got started like in the late 60s.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Danone wasn't always a thing.
No, it's funny how, you know, and when sushi first happened here, when it was first brought here, we're all like cats. You ever see cats when, you know, you're going to let the cat out and it's raining? You know, the dog goes charging out into the rain. The cat looks up in the sky, puts the paw out there, checks it out, makes sure it's okay, and they're much more cautious. And we were the same way. I mean, they started us on California rolls, and we're all looking at raw tuna like, I don't know about that, you know. And then all of a sudden now it's, you know, sea urchin and tuna and blowfish and, you know, anything goes. It's just completely absorbed into the mainstream American diet, you know, or restaurant goers or whatever, you know. It's just kind of, and it's the same thing, you know. Now I'll go back to the music thing. It's the same thing with music. I mean, the country guys always had great guitar players. There was always these, you know, these chicken picking, you know, kind of guys that were just off the charts. But now they got guys that, you know, kind of, you know, went a little past that and have a little more effects on their guitar. Guys like Brad Paisley and Vince Gill, who are phenomenal guitar players. I mean, you know, what's his name? Chet Atkins was probably the forerunner of that. He was just brilliant guitar player, you know. I wish I had a tenth of that talent, you know. It's just crazy to listen to them. They're very, very good. But, you know, it's all kind of, I mean, as I got older, I sort of mellowed. I was a little more kind of, you know, parochial in my tastes when I was a kid. And, you know, wouldn't want to listen to anything else except Jimi Hendrix and the Allman Brothers and that kind of thing, you know. But as I got older, I said, you know, like, miss. Other genres out there that are pretty cool. And, you know, they softened up. They softened up their stance. It's not all that twangy, you know, singing kind of thing that they do, you know. And they do it well. I'm not knocking it.
You got to love the stories they tell. I mean, there's one song we play on the station that talks about, I woke up on the wrong side of the truck with an empty bottle of Jack.
Yes, a lot of that going on. The one I like, it's the one by Vince Gill. It's hard to kiss the lips at night that chewed your ass out all day long. I mean, it's like, it's fat. Then I have another one, too. It's kind of political. I think my dog is a Democrat. Did you ever hear that one?
No.
Oh, it's hilarious, you know. And, you know, it's good to poke fun at both sides. I mean, you know, what the hell?
So now you're talking politics a little bit, or you mentioned politics.
Here we go.
The craziness, what's going on or what went on at Columbia.
That's nuts.
I guess it was Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. The university allowed the New York City Police Department to enter
the
building that the protesters had taken over. And, like, nothing is easy. They couldn't go in through the front door. They had to have this special vehicle that had a walkway that took them from the street level to the second floor, and they had to go in a double-hung window, meaning they pushed up the bottom of the window.
Yeah.
And watching these guys in all sorts of...
Yeah, police gear.
Police gear. Some were going in feet first. Others were going in head first. Others were doing the...
Thin guys to the front.
Split.
Heavier,
I mean,
guys,
it was
to
crazy.
Back. Yeah, it's crazy. The whole thing is nuts. I don't know. Listen, you have a right to protest. You want to go shoot your mouth off, great. Do whatever you want to do. Just leave everybody else alone. You know, that's the thing. When it starts to get like this, you got to bring some help
well,
in.
Well,
that's
where it gets questionable. I guess the foundation of America is to be able to speak your piece.
Sure.
And that's a good thing. But as almost in everything in life, where does it end?
Well, it ends with fire in a movie theater, you know? I mean, you can't have incendiary remarks going on because you're going to fire everybody up. I mean, you know, now it's just, it's gotten to the point where, and it's not even the kids, you know? These kids, I think Stalin had that term, useful idiots, you know? The kids aren't. They get these outside agitators. And
well, that's interesting you say that. And again, we're not going to spend the whole morning talking about politics, but... they interviewed, somebody called into one of the shows, actually, Hannity's show.
Uh-huh.
And they go, you know, when the protesters are using pre-printed signs.
Yeah, of course. I mean, there's a factory putting this stuff out.
It's not like they were hand-designing these things. So that was one thing. And then...
All the tents look the same,
too. They were saying that, you know, surveillance footage showed that convicted, not arsonists, but extremists, you know, were on site. Like, you know, somebody was in jail, so their wife was, you know, running the militia.
Sure, yeah.
So, and again, listening to the news reports, because of course, you know, everybody's on site for this, and they're broadcasting live. First of all, they're making announcements. You might hear words you don't normally hear on the news
because
they're literally in the street with the protesters.
Yeah.
But it's just.
Well, these are anarchists. They're not, you know, they don't give it, you know what, about Palestine. You know what I mean? This is all.
And that's what I
They want
to
take
say.
America down. It has nothing to do with that.
They were saying, you know, again, the Middle East is always been a complicated scenario.
Powder keg.
And again, to protest on behalf of the Palestinians is one thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, anti-Israel is another thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then when people forget about Hamas and the terrible things they're doing, so that's a whole nother thing. And again, you know, we're jaded by what we get reports on, but, you know, raping women, killing babies, decapitating people.
Sure.
It's just a mess. Where it goes, how it calms down. And then as they cleared out Columbia, they moved down to another school.
You know, it's funny to me. I've heard these comparisons with the 60s, and I was alive and well and a teenager at that time, and I remember those protests. They were anti-war protests. These are pro-war protests. These are river to the sea, get rid of the people, kill all the Jews. You know, that's war. That's not peace, you know. If you want peace, you know, you got to get rid of the terrorists, you know. But I just, like I said, I just don't think it's the kids. The kids are the tools they're using. But there's money and there's people behind this. There's anarchists behind this.
And the irony of life is Mayor Adams gets on the podium and he says, "Mothers, fathers, please call your children and tell them now is the time to renege and to, let's move on with this." How many kids listen to their parents?
Yeah, of course. And well, it's, you know, Mayor Adams, my hero. You know, so, thanks,
at
bud.
At any rate. But Playing with Fire is about food.
Yes, it is. I think Republicans, Democrats, Independents, and Anarchists can all, agree that we have to eat. And it's all about that. So I was in a really good restaurant the other night.
Tom, where were you?
I'll tell you. I was at Plori, Plori. Plori, a little Greek restaurant on Old Country Road in my neighborhood, right next to the diner called the Ham and Eggery, which is also a fabulous place that I used to get caught cutting out of school eating breakfast. And I'll tell you a great story about that. I was sitting there one day having my omelet or whatever I was eating, and I was supposed to be at a science class or whatever. I decided I didn't feel like going. I went to have breakfast, and I'm sitting at a counter and, I'm just kind of paying attention to the food, and I feel this person sit next to me and he goes, "Are you enjoying the breakfast?" And I went, "Yeah." And I turned around, it was the principal, Mr. Burke, So I'm sitting there next to the principal and he goes, "I have to take you back and, you're going to get a 3-day suspension." I said, "Okay, can I finish my omelet?" And he said, "Yeah, finish your omelet." He had a cup of coffee. So we went back. It was kind of funny because I wasn't really into school. And when you cut out of school, they gave you a 3-day suspension. And I'm thinking, this is great. I take one day off and I get a 3-day bonus. I'm really into this, And they outsmarted me. Eventually, they figured out what I was doing. And they would give you an in-school suspension where you had to sit in the office for 8 hours and, just stare at the wall, which wasn't too pleasant. So anyway, that cured me. But yeah, it was, if you ever in that area, it's just west of Roosevelt Field on the north side of the street on Old Country Road. There's a little diner called Thomas's Ham and Eggery. Parking's tough and it's always busy, so get there early. Or on Sunday, get there late after breakfast. And they always had this thing where they served the eggs in a pan. They had the frying pan come over to the table. It was kind of a cute thing. And it was there were two diners in Carr Place when I was growing up. One was up across the street from Fortunoff's, on the corner of Albany Avenue and Old Country Road. That was Libby's Diner, which is now the Majestic Diner, which is a great place. I mean, if you're into diners, it's as good as it gets. And then it was the Ham and Eggery, which was a little more countrified, a little more fun. My friend's mom worked there, so we used to go in. Mrs. Jankowski was the waitress. And great. But anyway, next door to that, they just opened up, I guess about maybe they're there almost a year, I want to say. Plori, Plori, which I was informed means the bow of the boat. That, and the significance of that is that people used to stand on the shore waiting for the fish, and they would get excited when they saw the bow of the boat coming into view because they knew the fish was on the way. So it was named Plori for that reason, and got a really talented chef there. Food is very, very good. I've eaten there fairly frequently. Last, 2 months or so. And just love it. It's a great place. They have a bouzouki player, if you like that. To me, bouzouki is kind of like the bagpipes. I got about a minute and a half, and then it sounds like fingernails on a blackboard to me. But the guy's very good, and if you like that kind of music, it you have to be into Greek night. It's a Greek thing for sure. But a lot of fun, and, good food, good people, fun set. Great list of Greek wines, which we should talk about a little bit, because a lot of people don't realize that they make very good wine in Greece, believe it or not. And olives. Who makes better olive and olive oil than Greeks? I think their olive oil rivals the Italians, actually, you know.
Wow. So, were you there for dinner?
I was. I stopped at, I'm a bar guy, you know, I eat at the bar all the time. And I know the bartender, so she's pretty attentive. And I like the bar for a couple of reasons. One is you never lose your server, you know what I mean? Sometimes you're in a dining room, you're looking around, you can't find, I need pepper, I need something, you're waving your hands, you know. That never happens at the bar. You know, the bartender's always right there. And, you know, if you're with your wife or girlfriend or and you have a little domestic issue, there's always other people to talk to if they're not, you know, if you're not, if it ain't flowing, as they say, you know. So I like sitting at the bar like that. And, yeah, what I have last night, I had, I started with figs that were wrapped in a little bit of, like, bacon, and it was stuffed with walnuts and some feta cheese. And it was served with this salad of peppers and onions, like a pepperonata, sautéed peppers and onions, but served cold. It was good.
Actually, sautéed but served cold.
Cold, yeah. It was like a, almost like a salad. And then I had crab cakes, which were very good. And it came with a beet salad, a little goat cheese on top, and some caviar. And some kind of a sauce. I wasn't really sure what it was. I didn't ask. It was good. It was just, you know, it wasn't really enhancing or taking away from the dish. It was just kind of Switzerland.
So I would have to guess it was some sort of aioli?
No, it wasn't aioli. It was almost, it was, it had the texture of like foamy, you know, kind of like yeah,
really?
It was, yeah, it was good. And then I had beans, the gigante beans, which I love.
Oh, yes,
you know?
Yes.
And they were stewed down with carrots and celery and onion and like a tomatoey, vinegary kind of thing.
Oh, wow.
With a little bit of mild feta on the top. It was very, very good. I mean, I went the appetizer out last
I'm
night.
I'm sitting here a little jealous, Tom.
Yeah, well, it's you
well,
know.
I gotta tell you. So call Mom on Sunday. Now, last Tuesday was, Monday and Tuesday was,
yeah,
Passover. There was a lot of food left over from my mother.
Yeah, she does this whole thing, right?
Yeah, incredible. I was just too lazy Tuesday night to bring anything home. And every day I would say I'm going over to Mom's to get the stuff. Now, stuff being, you know, a couple of days old doesn't scare me.
Yeah, me either.
You know.
Yeah.
Although the chopped liver, that's
You know. If that's 2 minutes old, it scares me. You know?
So, you know, and then Friday night, I don't know if it was Thursday night or Friday night, I had to take my grandson into Huntington. So I said, Ma, if I get done early enough, you know, I'll come over and get some stuff. Of course, it didn't happen. Friday night didn't happen. But at any rate, we get together on Sunday, and I didn't know if she's going to say it's leftover night or whatever. She goes, no, I don't know what to do. It's still Passover. Because Passover is actually 8 nights.
Yeah,
so
sure.
So it started last Monday, and it ended this past Tuesday night. This is the first meal you can have that wasn't, as the Jews say, Pesedik. So she goes, I don't know what we can get. I said, well, you know, it's not that complicated, Ma. Tom and I were talking about the diner the other day. I think we can figure it out.
Yeah.
So she goes, oh, okay. So she goes, she wanted some sort of chicken dish, and I didn't know what I wanted, so I went with a Greek salad, and much to your chagrin, I asked for it to be chopped.
Oh, yeah, you're killing me.
a serving of tuna on top. Get home, Mom's eating.
Fresh tuna, I'm hoping.
Fresh, no, it was, you know.
Tuna fish salad.
That's okay.
I can't even be your friend anymore.
They have really great dressing. It seemed to be missing something. The tuna was great. There was no feta.
Really? That's sacrilegious.
And then I'm going, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to call up and they're going to tell me to come back. I'm not coming back. I didn't know what to do. And then I said, I'm calling because this is ridiculous. And they said, do you want to come back? You know, the waitress was
no,
very
deliver
nice.
It.
She goes, you know, I didn't check your order. I didn't, you know, look at it before
yeah,
it went out,
yeah,
so
yeah.
I apologize about that. But and then I started self-doubting myself. I said, you know, I ordered the chopped salad with the tuna on top, but they gave me the Greek dressing. I said, I know I ordered a Greek salad.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and you know, that's unusual, because, you know, Greeks put feta on cornflakes, you know what I mean? Yeah. Cocoa Puffs, whatever. I mean, it just...
But to me, there's something about a Greek salad with a scoop of tuna and the feta cheese. It just takes it somewhere.
Yeah, I'm a grilled shrimp guy.
You had mentioned that last week. And I want you to know, you're very much incite me, because I was in a place in the city. I might have mentioned that I went to a Bill's Burger Bar. I went to Barry Manilow a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I got a burger with sautéed onions, because, Tom, you talk about sautéed onions.
Absolutely.
On an English muffin.
That's perfect.
But when I tell people that, they go, English muffin.
Yeah, no, it's I like it much better. I eat maybe 3 hamburgers a year. It's just not my thing, you know. I'm not a sandwich guy, really. I'll do maybe 3 or 4 hamburgers a year at best, and maybe 5 or 6 half pastrami sandwiches at Ben's a year, you know. And that's good enough for me. I'm not a big bread guy, you know.
Well, that be said, I know you're like a little, pardon my language, pissed off this morning, because we're recording on a different day. When we record on Fridays, Tom gets to have a coffee.
Half a bagel. Yeah.
And we're not sure about the quality of the bagel, but technically it's a bagel.
If you toast them, they're all the same.
That's where I was
going. Scoop them and toast them.
So at any rate, you didn't have your bagel this morning.
No, I'm a little ornery.
You're surviving. But another influence, I seem to go to Bagel Boss a lot. I don't really go to many delis.
Mm-hmm.
Happens to be, I like the Bagel Boss tuna and
sure.
stuff, but I can't go in there now and not get it on a toasted bagel.
It's fabulous.
Scoop, toasted, yep. A la Tom.
It's one of my, used to be, I got to watch kind of sugar lately, you know, and it probably has nothing to do with bagels. It probably has to do with the gallons and gallons of wine I drink, but, you know, so I'm kind of trying to behave myself. So once a week I'll reward myself, but, you know, good tuna salad on a toasted scoop bagel and, you know, a nice newspaper for half an hour is a great way to kill, you know, a morning. And I'm not a breakfast guy. I mean, I know that, you know, I stopped at a diner the other day and it was like 10:30. And there's a really cool taco place in Carr Place now on Old Country Road, right where Total Wine is.
Yeah.
In that shop, it's in Tacombi. It's called Tacombi, I believe. And it's really Mexican street food, but done really well. I mean, I had a taco in there. It was as sloppy as it was supposed to be. It came with a dip, the whole thing, just like it, you know, like if you were in Juarez, you know, same thing. And so anyway, I'm digressing here a little bit. It was like 10:30. I'm thinking, oh, I'm right over in the hood here. You know, I wonder what time they open. They didn't open until 11:30. So I wound up at the diner, right? And it's like 10:30 in the morning. And I'm torn between... You know, the only two things I order at a diner generally are, you know, an egg white omelet with, you know, feta or mushroom and tomato or something along those lines, and a Greek salad with grilled shrimp. And it's, you know, it's that dividing line for me. Like at 10:30, I could go either way, you know. I can generally go either way at 9 o'clock, but I feel stupid ordering a salad at 9 o'clock and I'm 8:30 in the morning. So I was back and forth. Then I'm like, all right, I'll have the Greek salad, you know, with the grilled shrimp. And then I get it, and I'm like, should have had the omelet, you know, kind of thing. It's like, and then, so Valerie says, why don't we have one of each, both? Yeah, so we did, and so I got a little taste of the omelet.
So you were talking about tacos, but first, when I talk about Bagel Boss, if I don't say hello to JoJo from
JoJo,
Bagel Boss.
How are you, bud?
And he's always asking about Tom and how he
abandoned
him from the Vanderbilt when you had the Kingfish over
Kingfish,
there.
Kingfish, yeah. I didn't abandon him. I got like, what's it called? A pandemic doubt, you know?
There you go.
Yeah.
But here in Farmingdale, there's an unbelievable taco joint. I'll call it a joint, but technically it's a grill. El Paso... authentic taco grill on Conklin.
Conklin, yeah, I pass it all the time.
It's incredible. And again, it's not the crisp tacos, it's the pan.
Soft.
The soft.
Yeah, that's the way
and,
you
And incredible selection. It's absolutely, positively the most incredible experience. I'm usually lucky. I get some of my son's leftovers, so I don't even have to go there.
Yeah.
And even order it. But it's like they have... So I guess it would be a sauce that you put on and stuff, mm-hmm. but it's
salsa verde or something? Is it green?
Whatever, but it's very brothy. Yeah. That's the way to describe. But it's just an incredible experience. It gets written up all the time. But
I have to stop there because there's something about those little, you know, you have Dirty Taco and some places like that. They're kind of like restaurant-y, you know. This is more organic and earthy and, you know, kind of.
So the Dirty Taco makes me think they're all about non-traditional tacos.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a crazy great place. I've said this story in the past. It's sometimes like crazy to get into, especially on like a Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday, even Sunday. You know, so I don't think they take a reservation, so you got to put your name on the list. So many times I'll run over there, and, you know, be the advance man.
Yeah.
And then everybody comes over. But if we are going with a group and we're going to have to wait, Carrie came up with this great idea. If you go to a football game and tailgate, why not tailgate when you go to Dirty Taco?
Yeah, tailgate, bar.
So we sit in the back of the Escalade with our own bottles.
Yeah, there you go.
And it works out well. But
I think that, you know, the magic of Dirty Taco is the price point. You know, the food's good. I'm not, you know, fine. That's great. Okay, let's assume that's the case. But, you know, the appeal for what I think the appeal of tacos are, A, they're great and they're quick and you can do some interesting things with them. But, B, they're not expensive.
No, they're not.
And I think that appeals to a lot of people now.
And they use the soft taco pancake.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But it's the variety. You know, they have Thai chili, chicken, and fish and... it's just a lot of varieties. What I find sometimes, because I'm neurotic and not a normal person.
You're kidding.
Sometimes they actually give you the taco. Instead of being one pancake, it's wrapped. There's two.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's intentional.
That's intentional. It's sometimes when they're too juicy, they just break out the one. That's why they
double
them
up. So for me, it's the means because I like to share.
Right.
So for me, it's the greatest thing is I take one, make it into two, and I, you know, I'm able to trade. It's like in the old days with my baseball cards, you know.
Yeah.
These two for that, you know.
Yeah. That's kind of like half price, too, by the way.
But, you know, again, Dirty Taco, great variety of stuff. Again, non-traditional. And then also the flights of tequila are incredible. It's like, I think there's like a, it's like a, in growing up, an old Chinese restaurant, you know.
Column A, column B, yeah.
Yeah, so there's like three different tiers of the flight,
right,
and you get to choose three or four tequilas, and it's, again, it's a great experience.
It's a lot of fun.
You know, you can go with anything from the frozen, you know, margarita to a non-frozen margarita to crazy, you know, they got watermelon with
specialty
chili
drinks and stuff,
pepper on the rim.
Yeah, fun stuff. It's fun food. I mean, you know, to me, tacos are one of the greatest vehicles for experimentation and imagination. I mean, you can do. I tend to stay away from things like, you know, the Asian shrimp tacos. I mean, my friend Billy used to make a great one over at West End Cafe, and I get it. It tastes good, the whole thing. I'm a little more careful about that. You know, I think, you know, you mash those things together, and there's nothing wrong with it. But me, I there's more authentic kind of things going on.
That's why this El Paso place on Conklin and Farmingdale, mm-hmm. it's just a little bit west of 110.
Uh-huh.
You know, definitely.
Yeah, it's on the north side, right? It's on the north side
of
the road.
It's on the north side.
Yeah. I passed it 100 times. Yeah, I think that, you know, when it comes to authenticity, I mean, I'm not trying to replicate and not trying to pretend I'm Mexican or whatever, but I like, you know, like the lamb barbacoa and, you know, and carne asada and the pork and the Baja fish taco, stuff like that. There's plenty of avenue. Duck, I do an octopus taco sometimes. It's kind of fun. That's sort of traditional Mexican.
I mean, they have like Korean short rib. I guess carne asada might be traditional.
Yeah.
Chimichurri, birria. But then they have like Asian sloppy joe, Thai meatball.
Yeah, Thai meatball.
Bacon cheeseburger.
Oh, come on. I can't take it. Bacon cheeseburger.
Kung Pao chicken. Southern fried chicken.
This is where? At the place
taco.
No,
this is Dirty
Taco. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And then they got a couple of different fish ones. you know, it again, it's definitely the type of place, you know, to go and share. I mean, to me, even, again, sharing is a big word in my vocabulary when it comes to food. First of all, I can pronounce it. But, I mean, even when I do sushi, you know, there's nothing. I remember back in the day, and I guess I was the chagrin of you over at Jewel, because I would sit in the main part of the restaurant and want to have sushi. But we celebrated Carrie's birthday once, and you sent over a sushi boat.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's the ultimate to me, you know, variety, you know. It's just the best.
Well, I think that sharing is what food is really all about. I mean, you know, there's that ceremonial go out to dinner and you have yours and I have mine and we'll eat together. But there's still that conviviality, that exchange of ideas, that, you know, here, taste mine, taste yours back. There's something about that I think that if the world had a little more of that, we'd be a little better off. I mean, I think that, you know, it's the kind of choosing up sides that kills us all, you know what I mean? And I'm not talking about boundaries. You can have countries and culture, and that's fine. But, you know, why does it always have to result in some kind of fighting? Why can't it just be, hey, man, instead of a missile, I'm going to send over some takeout, you know what I mean? And we'll, you know, you check mine out, I'll check yours out, and we'll talk about it later, you know?
I got to ask you a question, just in the middle of everything. If you get invited to a barbecue, what do they serve at a barbecue?
Well, a home backyard barbecue?
We're celebrating, we're having, the staff is invited to a barbecue.
Oh, boy. I would think you would get, you know, barbecued ribs and chicken. And
I would have thought hamburgers and hot dogs.
No, I think hamburgers and hot dogs are probably going to be in there. But I mean, to me, a real barbecue is, you know, I'm more, you know, focused on the word and the genre. So I would, if somebody said, hey, can you make a barbecue, I would do brisket, I would do, you know, maybe chicken, pulled pork for sure, ribs, you know, corn.
I'm big enough to admit being wrong then, because when I hear
you're thinking backyard barbecue.
Maybe that was
I'm thinking that, Franklin, you know.
Yeah, so that was probably it. A backyard barbecue would be the hamburgers and Franks and corn.
Wonder
and
bread rolls.
Barbecue is the pulled pork and the brisket. And hanger steak.
Sure,
and
yeah.
Whatever.
Beans. Yeah, brisket, yeah. Beans, yeah. I love that stuff. You know, it's a fun way to eat. I mean, you know, but it's funny with barbecue. My partner decided one year that we were going to open up a barbecue place, right? I don't know, you remember Eli's Roadhouse? This was an aberration that I did. I was in the middle of building 1,000 restaurants at the time because I thought I was going to take over the world, see how that worked out, right? And so we decided to do this place. We took over a diner in Plainview, and I wanted to do kind of a sort of a family-style, very hip Italian.
Wait. Time out. So you mentioned Eli's Roadhouse.
Right.
So my mind went to, I'm not familiar with that. Then you start talking about the diner.
Yeah.
That was that crazy restaurant in the corner of Hicksville Road and Hempstead Turnpike talking about.
No. The diner I'm talking about is on the corner of Old Country Road and 135.
Oh, okay.
Now it's a sports bar or something, you know. I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, so we took over this diner, and I wanted to do a very hip Italian trattoria.
That's not what now is the main event, is
yes,
it?
Yes, yeah, that's it.
And it was called Eli's Roadhouse?
Yeah, for about an hour.
Wow.
Yeah. So we get into this thing, and I decided that I was going to do this very hip Italian pasta bar, trattoria, salads thing, right? My partner, who was a dentist, who's a dear friend of mine, decided that he was a restaurant expert, and he had some other guy he was talking to influencing him, and he said, no, I want to do this restaurant. You don't know how much I know about restaurants. And I'm like, oh, really? Why don't you explain to me how much you know about restaurants, dentist, you know? So he goes, Well, I've eaten in every important restaurant in the United States, and I've flown to Europe, and I've eaten in Italy and France and the other thing. I said, okay, you know what? I've flown to California, I've flown to Italy, I've flown to France. I never landed the plane. There's a big difference between eating in a restaurant and running one and building one, you know? You're a dentist. I wouldn't think of pulling a tooth. I know how to use pliers. I know where the tooth is, and I know if I pull enough force on it, it'll come out. But it doesn't make me a dentist, you know? Anyway, so, okay, hey, listen, it's your money, you do it. So we opened up this Eli's Roadhouse. You had to see the menu. The menu had my partner's idea of building a menu was to stand out front and ask anybody what they wanted to eat while the building process, and he would write it all down and then put it on a menu. He had 1,000 things. We had meatloaf, meatballs. It was just insane, right? And I said to him, I was aggravating him so much, he sent me to Chicago, you know, to get me out of his hair for a week, right? So he says, go eat in Chicago for a week and leave me alone. I said, okay, I just want to leave you with this one thought. You're opening up a barbecue place, pulled pork, pork ribs, in the middle of a Jewish neighborhood. You think that's a good idea? And I left, right? So I come back, and it turns out that we were very busy in the beginning, almost like too busy. But it petered out really quickly, and I think part of the reason was that I don't think barbecue is the type of food that translates or travels well. I mean, I think if you're in Texas and you're at Franklin Barbecue, there's going to be a line out the door from, you know, the time you get there until the time they close, because it's barbecue country. If you go down to Kentucky, you know, or Kansas or the Carolinas, you know, it's a cultural type of food. You have Carolina barbecue as opposed to Texas barbecue, as opposed to Mississippi, whatever. I mean, there's all different sauces and things, and these people really get into it. When you translate that or try and get it to travel to New York, people are, well, yeah, it's okay, but, you know, I don't know, I don't want to eat. It's fatty, it's the calories, the thing, it's too sweet, it's too not. So if you look at Manhattan has maybe 5 barbecue places for 8 million people. You go down in the Carolinas, there's 8 million barbecue places for 5 people, you know? It's just a different cultural thing. It's like, I remember when New Orleans food was getting really hot in the middle 80s, late 80s, and Paul Prudhomme was doing all black and red fish and all that, and he opened up a K. Paul's up here. And K. Paul's was the most famous restaurant in New Orleans for a while. And it was just a kind of a joint, you know, where he did a lot of blackened fish, and he was cooking like his family cooked in the backwoods of Louisiana. And it was all fun. It was all great. I mean, food was good. But you were down there, and it was the vibe. It was, I'm in New Orleans. It's him. He's cooking. It's a smoke. It's da-da-da. He tried opening a place in New York, and maybe it lasted a year, year and a half. It just doesn't travel well. Barbecue doesn't travel well, I don't think. And so that's why I said to Mike, after about a month or two of this barbecue place that he had me pulling my hair out over, I said, I'm going back to Montauk, because we had a restaurant in Montauk. We were opening up for the season. I'm out of here. Get a chef. I can't do this. This is nuts. That's the place where the lady came in and the two ladies wanted me to cook a hamburger half medium and half medium rare. Ever tell you that story?
No.
Oh, so I get this order, comes in the kitchen, right? So the waitress comes in. She goes, I have two women out there. They want a burger, but they want one half cooked medium and one half cooked medium rare. They're going to split it. I'm like, you know what? There's a limit to my patience, right?
So, Tom, come on. So you cut in the half and you cook it.
I'm not going to do it. I said, no. I've had for $7 or whatever the hell we were charging for a burger at the time, 25 years ago. I said, I'm not doing this. This is insane. I'm not doing that, you know? So she goes out, tells the lady, says, okay, fine, you know, just make it medium rare. I said, okay, you know. Got them, right? I make it medium rare, send it out, cut it in half, send it out. Sends back the other half. Could you put more fire on this? It's like I'm dealing with two pros, you know what I mean? They're looking at me like, oh, the poor little lamb. Wait, we'll fix him, you know? It's hilarious.
You know, you mentioned the cost of food thing. Again, within reason, I'm usually pretty shocked. I took something out of the diner the other night from mom and my dinner, and she got a grilled chicken breast with some grilled vegetables on it, whatever.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit substantial. And I got my feta cheeseless Greek salad. The check was $53.
Oh, yeah. I spent $60 for breakfast the other day in a diner. And, you know, the thing is, I feel for them. I, you know, diners are the the equivalent of the canary in the coal mine for restaurants. It's when they start to go, you know there's trouble, and they're starting to go. I mean, I made mention of the sign. There used to be a sign. Well, there is a sign on Old Country Road in Westbury, or Carr Place, whatever you want to call it. It's Carr Place School District, Westbury Post Office. Confusing. But it's right across from that mall there. And it's Majestic Diner, and it says open, and it used to say 24 hours, and now they have a big white piece of plastic over the 24-hour sign because they're not. So the diners went from being open 24 hours to, you know, opening at 8 in the morning and then closing at 10 or 11 at night, 12 at night. I was in a diner recently, and it was 5 to 12 at night. It was after a gig. Mike and I went down to this diner to get something to eat. And at 5 to 12, you know, the waiter came over and said, oh, we're closing. Could you just get the hell out of here, you know, kind of thing. I mean, he didn't say that literally, but that's what he was implying. So we had to leave. But, you know, and I think the reason is that you know, people just aren't eating the way they used to, number one. And number two is there's no money in it, you know. I mean, diners used to be cheap to go to. You know, you would have the whole dinner would include soup and a salad and, you know, ice cream or whatever you want for $22. And it would have a huge selection. If you didn't really care about the authenticity of the food, you could have a veal parmesan, you could have a meatball hero, you could get breakfast, you know, two guys can have eggs, one guy can have a lamb chops. It was kind of free-for-all. You could have whatever you want. You know, those diner menus were huge. And they could do it fairly inexpensively because the food cost wasn't crazy. And generally they would house their help, you know, and so they would have a little less. You know, they would buy a house that was close to the, I know Mr. Libby had a house right down the block, and he used to put five or six guys in there, and they would pay him rent, and he would, you know, or he would just have a pay them a little less to compensate for the rent. So he was making money on the house. The house was appreciating, and he had it paid for by these guys. So they were making money in both ways, and they were able to do it at a reasonable cost. But now that's over. I mean, you know, now it's time and a half. You have to have overtime, a spread of hours. Anything over 10, they get twice as much. It's, you know, the government got involved, and you know, in their zeal to save the poor downtrodden, they kind of screwed everybody. They screwed the owners because now the owners have to pay a lot more money, and the diners are closing. The people that work there have to find another job. And, you know, I know from my end of it, you know, when it comes to overtime, I try and keep people around 40 hours. But, you know, a lot of these people, you know, they want to work, right? And I've had guys tell me, you don't have to pay me time and a half. I just want the hours. I said, no, I have to by law, and I can't. You're worth $20 an hour, $22 an hour. You know, I can't pay you $35, $40 an hour. So the result is I keep them around 40 to 45 hours. I give them a little bit of overtime. But then they have to go out and find another job to compensate for the hours that they lost. So now they have to go find another job where they're not being paid overtime for the extra 10, 15, 20 hours they're working. So what did you do? I mean, you basically screwed everybody. You screwed the people that were, you know, trying to make a living with the restaurant. You screwed the people who were trying to work in the restaurant. And you know, all for the sake of, you know, standing in front of everybody on TV and telling us all how compassionate you are. You know, I think if the government would just stay out of everybody's business, get me the mail and keep the Russians from, you know, like blowing us up. That's basically your job description. Everything else, I mean, they're into everything. They're into marriage, gay, straight, whatever. What are you doing, you know? Just stay out of everybody's business. You know, I'm railing about the government here anyway. But
wait, I had to walk out for a second, and this is like a donut.
Yeah, well, the more I was saying it, the madder I got. You know, just having a temper tantrum there for a minute.
So I'm looking. I'm sitting across from Tom in the studio, and he's wearing his Long Island Music Hall of Fame T-shirt, which I have the same shirt. Mm-hmm. But it made me think about something that I saw last night on a very educational show, TMZ.
Oh yeah, there you go.
Billy Joel just had a concert, and they were playing Uptown Girl, and they had a video of Christy Brinkley, you know, getting into it at the concert.
Uh-huh.
And then they go on to say, but Billy Joel was dating Elle McPherson at the time, and there's rumors that that was really who the song is about. But then
Yeah, he kind of changed
Christy
lanes.
Christy Brinkley came around and he played it up that it was for her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, but I, you know, I'm not one to critique. Billy Joel might not be the best looking guy in the world, but Elle McPherson and Christy Brinkley, wow.
It shows you what. Why do you think I play music? At whatever level, you know? It's funny, you know, that. There's this adage, or whatever you want to call it, in the music business, that the singer gets all the girls, you know. And it's true. I mean, you look at Eddie Van Halen. Eddie Van Halen is maybe one of the top three guitar players that ever came around, you know. And it was David Lee Roth who needed Lloyd's of London insurance to get his pregnancies, you know what I mean? So it was like one guy has marginal talent. This other guy's a monster, and it's the guy with the marginal talent, you know.
Meanwhile, wins the day. The vocalist, the lead singer, is, you know, he's the guy that can't go out and get wild and stuff. And you hear about all these different musicians and singers these days that are having voice issues.
Oh, yeah.
The latest one, Jon Bon Jovi, there's a documentary out now, a four-part documentary, and he talks about how he had some damage to his vocal cords and the rehabilitation or whatever. And you know, you talk about freaking out, you know, you have that sense of the level of celebrity, and then all of a sudden you can't do what you do. My mind goes quickly to Linda Ronstadt, that has some sort of disease that she can't vocalize anymore. I don't think she can speak anymore.
You know, I mean, it's a muscle like anything else, and if it's abused, I mean, you have to use it to kind of build it up. But at some point, it atrophies, you know, as you get older. I mean, I know, I remember going to see Bill. I like Billy Joel. I've met him. He's a very nice guy. Always been nice to me. I think he's a great songwriter. He's a very good piano player. But it's not my genre. So I don't want to say I was dragged to the show, but I went to the show. I was like, okay, whatever, you know. And I was watching it. He put on a great show. He's the ultimate performer. But I saw him. You know that song "Innocent Man," where it goes goes really high. He had somebody else doing that for him.
That's so funny you say that. So I'm very lucky. I got to see Billy Joel New Year's Eve. Had really great seats. I mean, I've seen Billy Joel a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, it's all this hysteria about his residency at the Garden was
sort of coming to end.
So he played UBS Arena.
Uh-huh.
And I made sure to get really nice seats. But when that song came up, he's got a shtick. He goes, we're going to play a song. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to hit the notes that I want to hit.
Yeah.
So I'm just warning you now. If I do, it's a wonderful thing. If I don't, you go home and you say, Billy didn't hit the notes.
Yeah, what's the big deal?
You know, but, you know, as in life, I guess Billy leans on Mike Del Judas a bit to fill in on the vocals. And that's not an unusual thing either, because I look at Frankie Valli, who it was Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons and whatever. But when he tours now, he, again, can't necessarily hit those notes. The falsetto, I guess they call it.
Yeah, falsetto.
So he tours with three, just like with the Four Seasons, but three younger guys. But
yeah.
it's sort of like Boys to Men. You know, they're there, and they're supposed to be backup. But you know they're hitting them. And that makes me think of, again, some of our more senior listeners might know Lou Christie.
Mm-hmm.
He's another one with that falsetto.
Lightning strikes.
Yeah, and like Lou.
It was more than falsetto, you know.
I get a kick because, you know, he looks pretty good for his age. I to be honest, I haven't seen him in probably about 10, 12 years, if not longer.
Yeah.
But when he gets on there, he would be wearing, you know, the tight pants and the flowing shirt or whatever. But he'd, like, get into a pose. He'd pull at his crotch, and he goes, I'm getting ready.
Oh, no.
You know?
That looks different at 70 than it does at 20.
Goes,
you know,
some people think that it was the tight pants that got me up there.
Yeah, probably was, you know. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, even at my own little amateur level, I feel it. I told you a couple of weeks ago, I discovered some old master tapes that I had that I did a demo for years ago. And, you know, I hear the singing on it now, and there's places I can't get to. You know, this is 35 years ago. I was able to sing higher than I am now. And I was never a great singer by any stretch of the imagination, but I could reach some notes, and that ship has sailed, as they say, you know. So I either change keys now or I avoid songs that are, you know, too difficult for me to do. But I guess it's just a function of getting older. I mean, you know, it's like you can't lift what you used to lift. You know, you can't. It's like every other muscle in the body. It just it kind of says, you know, no more. But that's the great part about music. And it's funny because I was at dinner the other night with my grandkids. You know, it cost me another $275 in sushi to do with them. But anyway, somehow the guitar came up because I gave my granddaughter a guitar, one of my guitars, for Christmas a couple of years ago so she could learn. And she's too into softball to bother with the music, but the guitar came up. And my grandson, who's a complete character, goes, "Paco, while we're speaking about instruments," he goes, "I want to play the clarinet." And I said, "You know, I just happen to have a clarinet." He goes, "You do? What are you doing with a clarinet? You're a guitar player." I said, "Well, my dad was a clarinet player, and I have his clarinet, you know. So when you're ready, let me know, and I'll use it." And I just, you know, the reason I'm bringing that up is I just want the kids to have that musical thing in their quiver, you know, because it's a lifetime pursuit, and it's a lifetime of joy. I mean, I've been playing guitar since I'm 11 years old or whatever, at various levels. Never really great, you know, but I'm competent, and it just gives me so much pleasure. I mean, even now at my age, I'm 71, right? I'm still playing gigs here and there. I'm still able to do it. And I think as long as you're not standing up there with big hair and spandex pants looking ridiculous, you know, you can do it forever. I mean, look at Les Paul was playing the Iridium Theater at 91 years old, 92 years old. How cool is that? You can't do that. You're not playing softball at 91. You know, you're not playing maybe darts, you know, but that's about it. You know, you're done. And music is kind of forever. You know, hopefully you don't get arthritis, so you play the piano, whatever. So I think that, you know, that from a kid's perspective is such an important thing. I mean, and kudos to the schools for offering all of that stuff, you know. What is it? I think when they're in fourth grade, right, they start maybe piano and violin clarinet.
Don't you make the mistake. I went to my granddaughter the other day. I said, "Are you still playing the violin?"
"Oh, the violin. Oh, God."
"Grandpa, I play the viola."
"Oh, yeah. Well, it's a little bigger, you know. There's nothing worse than an aspiring violinist, you know. It sounds like cats having sex most of the time, you know. And until it's in the hands of Itzhak Perlman or somebody who really knows how to play, the violin can be painful to listen to, you know, a beginner, you know. But, you know, God bless him. I remember going to my daughter's concert. She played the French horn, you know. And my luck, it was always the last to come on. So you had to sit through the, you know, the orchestra, you know, which was the violins and the cellos. And you'd sit there and go, "Could somebody tune these things, please?" You know, and then, you know, you get the vocalists, you know, the chorus, and then you would get the band. But it is sometimes as painful as it can be to hear those notes, you know, being played off. It's so cute to watch the kids, you know, because they're so enthusiastic and, you know, they're trying hard. And kudos to the teachers. I mean, to try and get, you know, a bunch of fourth graders together to play a song can't be easy. I can't get five professional musicians to, you know, come in and play a tune.
I got to tell you a quick story. So you talk about the kids and, you know, we're getting into the spring and it's all about dance recitals.
Yeah.
And my daughter calls me and she goes, you know, "Can you come to Rose's dance recital? It's on May 18th.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, "I think so." And I'm thinking about, you know, bringing my mom again, always looking to keep her busy. And so I call my social management team, Kerry, and I go, "We got anything going on the 18th? And she goes, "We're coming back from her son's graduation in Rhode Island." And I'm thinking, you know, for me, life is complicated. I guess I'm very blessed to be able to have a lot of things going on in my life between work and networking and family. So I'm sort of obligated to go to Rhode Island for the graduation. So I'm going to miss the recital. And then we were just reminiscing about last year, and I it's a cute story. So I got away with something. So last year, my son-in-law had some surgery, and he wasn't in the best of
mobility.
Mobility.
Yeah.
So I got there real early. Because at these things, it was at the Tiller Center, but still, parking becomes crazy.
Oh, yeah,
everybody
sure.
becomes an animal.
Yeah.
So I got there early, got parking, and I said, you know, this way, you know, I'll be able to help Mike out. So, and I had somewhere to go that day, which was interesting. So I get there, I get a parking spot, the family gets there, I get to see my granddaughter. She thinks I'm there.
Oh, yeah.
For the whole thing. So I get away with it, hugs and kisses. Oh, it's going to be so exciting or whatever. I leave so that I can give up my parking spot to my son-in-law.
Yeah.
And I move on. So I guess the Lord above is getting even with me because now I feel guilty that I'm not going to be there. But you can't be at multiple places.
No. It's hard, you know. So here's the question about guilt. I dated a Jewish woman for a long time years ago, and we used to have this argument. Who invented guilt, and who raised it to an art form?
No, the Italians invented guilt, and the Jews perfected it.
Yeah, you guys took it to an art form? Is that what it is?
Yeah,
right.
for sure.
So the Italians being Catholics, so the final word is the Catholics invented guilt, and the Jews raised it to an art form.
For sure.
All right.
For sure. But, you know, that's what's so funny with Sebastian Maniscalco. The Italians and the Jews are so similar, which is amazing when you talk about Long Island and
sure.
you have places like Massapequa.
Massapequa, of course.
It's absolutely crazy. But, yeah, when Sebastian Maniscalco starts going through his routine and talking about Italian, the Jews really can relate to it. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you have two cultures that revolve around the table. You know what I mean? That's kind of, I mean, you know, other than the fact that, you know, the religions are kind of close. You know, you have, you know, don't eat, don't cheat, don't skill, kill, you know, that kind of all the A-level stuff is the same. But I think that the biggest common denominator between Italians and Jews is eating. You know what I mean?
It's yeah, just, no, for sure.
You know, when I look at demographics to open a restaurant, I'm looking for Italians and Jews. I mean, it's, you know, that's yeah, what
you
I know. Look for.
So I bare my soul here on the radio show. You know, I live dangerously. So it was really funny. So this thing with the graduation, Carrie goes, you know, I'd invite you to the graduation, but there's issues of where everybody's going to stay. So I sort of got a little annoyed and I said, you know, wow, not getting invited to the graduation. It's like, you know, it goes without saying
so disrespectful,
that I'm usually there.
Of course, yeah.
So, you know, but she didn't want to take a hotel room. She was going to stay with her son's girlfriend's place or whatever. So it wasn't
real. Yeah.
So now all of a sudden that I'm invited, I can't say no.
No.
And then I got this, again, guilt about not seeing my granddaughter. But I am the luckiest guy around because my grandchildren live near me, much like you.
Sure.
I can see them whenever I want.
Yeah.
So hopefully it all works out.
Yeah. And, you know, the grandparent thing is so funny. I always call it your reward for not killing your children, you know, as your grandkids. But, you know, to be able to have that relationship and, you know, I've had it for 9 years now. And I'm hoping it goes another 9, at least. But, you know, you can make a real impression on them. I mean, my parents were a little crazy. My grandpa, I had 4 Hall of Fame grandparents. And if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be as stable as I am now, Stu.
No, again, and we're near the end of the show. But, again, I'm just so lucky because I get to be able to mix a family with business in the sense that, again, goes back to 103.1 The Wolf. We had an event up at the Paramount last week, and my daughter calls, hey, can you take Ethan to his basketball practice because Mike's out of town?
Yeah.
I said, yes. And again, my mindset is that family comes first.
Sure.
If I didn't get to the radio station,
whatever.
Event, whatever. But it turned out his thing was in Huntington. So I got to Huntington early, did what I needed to do, shot south to Belmore, picked up Ethan, brought him back brought him up to Huntington,
right.
Around the corner from the Paramount, parked the car, hang out for a couple of hours, and then retrieve him from basketball.
Yeah, it all worked out.
To take him home. So it all works out. So again, in my microcosm of life, I don't take it for granted. I just am so lucky, And I try to own it as much as possible.
And a guilt-free day.
God bless you.
Okay, with that, we're going to end the show with Tom Sirkis, The Life, which is Life is Too Short to Be Guilty. Treat every meal like it was your last and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza. We'll see you next week.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shawdell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.